All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm reacting to the news that the Falcons are letting go of Ben Garland, as well as reacting to the terms of the Ty Sambrello contract.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are giving you more Falcons content. We're punting our Q&A to tomorrow's show. Again, I, you know, reserve the right to cancel that Q&A in the event that some big bombshell drops for the Falcons. And today, you know, for me, it's was a little bit of a bombshell. I thought, you know, we get a couple of days to sort of let this Ty Sambrello thing simmer. And then, of course, Mike Garofalo of NFL Network, or is it Garofalo? I don't know how to say his name. Please tweet me the exact pronunciation of Garofalo. We'll go with Garofalo because it sounds like Garoppolo and whatever. But he basically tweeted out earlier this morning that the Ty Sambrello deal was worth up to $18 million, the three-year extension that the Falcons signed to him earlier this week, was worth up to $18 million with incentives. And he also tweeted out that the base deal, the base value, he believes is for over $14 million. So basically, from based off of Mr. Garofalo, it looks like, let's just go with 3 years, $14 million plus. And if you listen to yesterday's episode, when we talked about sort of the Sambrello extension, I basically said that the range that you would want to get Sambrello, too many Italian sounding names. The range that you want to get Sambrello signed, on was about 8 to 10.5 million over 3 years. So it seems like the Falcons went at least a good 3.5 million over that number, probably 4 million. And then when you count factor in incentives, it was significantly more. But incentives don't really matter really in this. Well, they may wind up mattering, but I don't think we should consider them too much because for reasons I will explain later. But because those incentives are probably tied to playing time. And again, we'll get to there. This is a significantly more than what I thought the Falcons should or would wind up paying for Sambrello. So that was sort of a little bit of a gut reaction. I had to go see a movie today just to sort of take my mind off of this contract for 2.5 hours, just to be entertained and be like, okay, like, you know, I don't have to think about Ty Sambrello for the 2.5 hours I'm in this movie theater. So, you know, I think let's give the positive spin. Let's give the most favorable, best case scenario, at least from my imagination. The positive spin is that ideally, this contract is structured in a similar way to how the Falcons structured Levine Toilolo's three-year, $12 million contract that they gave him in 2017. That deal, I think, basically worked out to be like a one-year, $4.5 million deal that I think Toilolo counted about $2.5 million in terms of salary cap in his first year, and then the rest was sort of signing bonus or whatnot. And the Falcons were basically able to get out of that contract because it had a relatively low signing bonus after the first season, which they wound up doing and going with a cheaper option last year with Logan Paulson. And we'll sort of see how the Falcons address their tight end depth in 2019 in the next couple of weeks/months. So my hope is that the Sambrello deal is sort of structured in a similar way where it's a one-year deal, let's say for $4 or $5 million, and the sort of cap hit that the Falcons will have to eat this year is less than $3 million, somewhere in that $2.5 million range. And so basically we're looking at a deal that the Falcons a year from now will be able to get out of. And the reason why they would get out of that deal a year from now is because they do exactly what I talked about on yesterday's show when we broke down this move, which is the team will still nab a long-term right tackle in the draft. And that basically what Sambrello is going to do is whether he starts the season this way or finishes the season this way, he is going to wind up being the swing tackle by year's end. And by year's end, the Falcons have already or are willing to turn the keys over to whatever rookie that they draft this year. And then hopefully as well, Matt Gano will have shown enough growth from now until the end of this upcoming season, again, assuming that he, you know, plays at a reasonably high level during training camp to make the roster, and that the Falcons will then see, well, Matt Gano's a much cheaper option to be our swing tackle, and he showed enough improvement in his second year in the league. And so we'd much rather pay Matt Gano $600,000 against our 2020 cap to be our swing tackle than paying Sam Brailo whatever his 2020 cap hit under this deal is, which was probably going to be, again, in the $4 or $5 million or possibly higher range. That, you know, similar to some of the other moves that the Falcons have made this offseason and recent offseasons, that they're not going to pay a non-starter, particularly a guy of Sam Brailo's ability, that much money to be a backup. So that, to me, is hopefully how this whole situation gets resolved. And if that's how it does get resolved, and if that's the Falcons' plan, I won't sit here and say it's a great plan, but it could wind up working out in their favor in the end, in sort of a no harm, no foul sort of sense, because all they're going to wind up losing is a couple of million dollars in terms of 2019 cap space and potentially 2020 cap space in as far as dead money goes, and they still get a good, solid, long-term right tackle out of this whole situation, or despite the fact that they've paid Ty Sam Brailo all this money. However, if the alternative is true and the Falcons pay Ty Sam Brailo this money because they see him as a legitimate candidate, or rather front runner, to be the team's starting right tackle in 2019, and this contract reflects that sort of confidence and whatnot and that optimism, then we're going to have a problem. And we'll talk about that coming up. But if you guys are curious about what's going on in the NBA side of the Locked On podcast, you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So, you know, we look at this Sam Brailo deal, and people are like, why, you know, Aaron, why are you always complaining about the Falcons move? Well, A, because I think the Falcons do some questionable things from time to time, and we have to talk about it. You know, part of the problem, you know, certainly, you know, there's more benefits than costs, but, you know, if there is a cost to being the host of the Locked On Falcons podcast, is that, you know, have to basically produce 100 hours of content every year. And if you did a, you know, because we do 4 half-hour shows every single week, you know, if you did only 1 hour show once a week, you would only have to produce half as much content. So it causes me to have to then, you know, have to put in twice as much work to dig through content and whatnot. And certainly, certainly you can argue and debate and discuss whether I should devote that 50 extra hours to things beyond complaining about Ty Sam Brailo, which is a fair, accurate statement. That's why I always suggest you guys to leave your feedback and give me topics to discuss that you want to hear me talk about on the podcast. That's one of the reasons why we do the Q&As and whatnot. But so, you know, that's one of the issues. I do want to make it clear, though, that I don't think the sky is falling. Like, the part of the problem is you have a vocal group of Falcon fans that are basically anti-Dan Quinn, and basically think every move the Falcons make between now and Dan Quinn's eventual dismissal, which they seemingly hope and or expect is going to happen in 2019, basically every move is reflective of Dan Quinn being a terrible head coach and the Falcons need to fire him and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I don't agree with that. I like Dan Quinn. I don't think he's perfect in any regards. I think some of his personnel moves are questionable, and we talk about these things on this podcast because I happen to believe that, you know, there are long-term ramifications, long-term ripple effects for positive and negative roster moves. You know, the Falcons are still paying for the fact that they decided to keep Justin Blaylock over Harvey Dahl in 2011, and still, you know, 8 years later, the Falcons still have a hole at the right guard position that hopefully they will be able to solve this offseason with the draft pick, but you never know. And, you know, there are positive moves, obviously, that have similar long-term ramifications. Clearly an obvious one is Matt Ryan and the selection of him over, say, a Glenn Dorsey that was, you know, for those of you younger Falcon fans, was the popular choice. Matt Ryan was an extremely unpopular pick among Falcon fans at the time. So there are positive moves that this team makes that have obvious long-term ramifications. You look at this last 11 years of relative success, particularly compared to the previous 40 plus years. So, going back to what I was originally saying, I don't want to make it sound like I think, you know, all these terrible moves that the Falcons are making that, you know, whether it's Dirk Koetter or cutting Matt Bryan or cutting Brian Poole or now overpaying Ty Sambrello, in my opinion, mean that the Falcons are doomed to fail this season. Like, I think that's people just being overly dramatic, overreacting to things. To me, the Falcons' success is going to be based off of how they perform from September to January. It's going to be based off of, you know, how good their offense is, how good their defense is. And so far, none of the moves, in my opinion, have really sort of shifted significantly those things. I think they have an impact on them, but I think because we still have free agency to go, we still have the draft to go, that the Falcons can still find good players at some of these positions that they arguably like, such as right tackle, such as cornerback with the Poole move, that they arguably are weakening potentially, but they can still get good players at that spot and be just fine. So I want to make that clear, because unfortunately, if I complain about the Falcons' moves, I feel like people are still going to lump me into this group of Falcon fans, of these disgruntled Falcon fans that sort of think the sky is falling, and I don't think it is. But again, because we got to produce content, you know, I got to talk about these things, and if I don't think the move is good, I'm not going to just simply say, well, the Falcons got a plan, and you know, they get the benefit of the doubt for why should they get the benefit of the doubt? Like, you know, generally speaking, yeah, Dan Quinn has made good moves, and I think for the most part this offseason he will make good moves, but I think some of the moves that they've made so far are certainly very questionable, and certainly the logic behind those moves is very debatable. But all that being said, I think the problem is, if the Falcons decided to pay Sambrello because they don't know, or they don't, more importantly, they don't want to use one of their top two picks in the draft on an offensive tackle, and they basically paid Sambrello as a quote-unquote starting caliber offensive tackle, then I do think this move is a poor choice. I think that is a poor choice. As I discussed on yesterday's episode, I think this is a golden opportunity for the Falcons to get a long-term right tackle. I know there are people out there, and certainly I have been of the opinion, the Falcons got to fix their pass rush, the Falcons got to do all this and all these other things, and they don't want to see the Falcons use a high pick on an offensive tackle, blah, 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 blah. I think that opinion is all well and good, but the bottom line is, in this league, you need quality right tackle play. And as even though I sit here and say, the Falcons' offensive line wasn't horrifying last season, particularly in the second half of the year. And we'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to the Ben Garland conversation. But like, even though I don't think the Falcons' offensive line was terrible, as some people would like to portray it as, I do think having a good offensive line is a great stabilizing force for your Falcons offense, or for any offense in the league. And I think the evidence is overwhelming suggesting that. And so if you have an opportunity to solidify and stabilize your offensive line, and that means drafting, using your first round pick on a right tackle, and that means using a, you know, a third or fourth round pick or whatever on an interior offensive lineman, guard or center, which we'll discuss later, I think those are great moves for the team. They're not sexy. They're certainly not sexy, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, those are bad moves. So I think that's really the core of the issue, is if now the Sambrello move, at least when you look at the money, it's either the Falcons either see him as a low-level starter because he's making more money than I think Brandon Fusco is making, or they're seeing him as like, oh, he's one of the best backup offensive linemen in the league, and we're going to pay him more than what most backup offensive linemen make. Frankly, twice as much as what backup offensive linemen make. And I think if that's the case and the Falcons sort of see it that way, I have a hard time seeing that. You guys know I've spent a lot of time on this podcast over the last couple of years complaining about Ty Sambrello. I do think, again, I will reiterate, I do think he played well over the last month of the season. Over those 3.5 games, he played at right tackle. He certainly was a massive upgrade over what Ryan Schrader had been giving us throughout the year. But I don't think simply because he was better than Ryan Schrader means that he should be handed the starting job. I don't think the fact that he held his own against the likes of Benson Mayoa and Wes Horton and Reggie Gilbert over that last month of the season now means that the Falcons or anybody should be confident that this year, when he's facing guys like J.J. Watt and Michael Bennett and Danielle Hunter and Cameron Jordan, all of whom are guys, again, that rush from the left side of their respective defenses, let alone the other players like the Frank Clarks of the world that flip-flop and play on both sides, and the Yannick Ngakoue that play on both sides, that you need capable right tackles, and I just don't think Sam Brailo, based off of what I saw in film this past season, is the guy that you want sort of being in that situation. Do you want a rookie in that situation? No. But at least with the rookie, when he struggles, you can be like, well, this is a long-term future. These growing pains that he's going to go through are going to pay off for us, you know, 3 to 5 years down the line, which is basically what you would say about Jake Matthews' struggles when it was guys like Sizzle and Jared Allen, Terrell Suggs, for those of you guys who don't know who Sizzle is, that were kicking his tail in his rookie year when he was dealing with an injury and whatnot. And so you look at the long term, it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back to take two steps forward. And I just don't think that's Ty Sam Brailo. I don't think this is a guy that you want to hitch your wagon to long term as if he's a replacement for a first or second round pick. And I think that's ultimately the problem. And I think the other reason why, you know, I sit here and complain about things, or at least this particular thing, is because now you've had a consistent situation where in 2017 it was Toy Lolo, in 2018 it was Matt Bryant, where the, and now potentially in 2019 it's going to be Ty Sam Brailo, where the Falcons pay a re-sign a player and give him a multi-year contract, and then a year later they're like, oh, our bad, that's a mistake, cut him. And it's like, you know, look, you can spin it as a positive thing that's different from the Mike Smith regime and Dimitroff and company under the Mike Smith regime, who rarely admitted these types of mistakes. And so it's a positive. Look, this is part of the reason why I don't hate Dan Quinn or anything. Like, this is a major step in the right direction that they can admit their mistakes. Although, again, I would argue that Matt Bryant was not a mistake. But that's a conversation that I've had another day. But I would sit here and say, like, that's a positive thing. But at the same time, if these things, if you keep consistently paying these guys and paying a guy like Ty Sam Brailo, you know, $4 or $5 million this year, when you only needed to pay him like $2 million this year, you know, these things are going to add up, particularly if it now suddenly means that your depth at cornerback is going to be weaker, and you basically decide, well, you know, Brian Poole's not worth $2 million. You know, you're not even willing to offer him the minimum RFA tender, which is $2 million, and you're basically overpaying Ty Sam Brailo. This is one of the things, you know, this is why we can't have nice things. It's like these types of moves, which, again, you know, the argument that was made 2 years ago was that the Falcons overpaying Toy Lolo was directly impacted their inability to sign Patrick DeMarco. And so it's like it's these types of things that are questionable. We'll see how they get worked out. We'll see what the Falcons could do. Again, I think the Falcons have an opportunity to, quote unquote, salvage this by using one of their high picks on an offensive tackle and getting, whether it's a Jonah Williams or a Dalton Reisner or a Jawan Taylor or whoever, Cody Ford, David Edwards, Yadni Kajust, whoever it is, Chuma Adoga, I don't know who it is, but whoever the Falcons draft is probably going to be better than Ty Sam Brailo, and hopefully it's someone good. So that's my hope. That's, you know, this is why I'm, you know, I'm all twisted up inside, because it's like all of a sudden it's like, is there a chance that the Falcons will punt on the offensive tackle position again? Are we about to enter the twilight zone where the Falcons once again are going to punt on their offensive line on drafting an early round offensive lineman? That's the core concern here. And that's why it raises a lot of questions. But we will talk about the probability that they will not punt on an interior offensive lineman when we talk about Ben Garland coming up in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know about the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, where you can listen to Matt being joined every day by some great guests to talk about all things NFL, wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So D. Orlando Ledbetter reported late last night, or late Tuesday evening, shortly after midnight, was when I saw that the Falcons were reportedly, according to sources, not going to plan on re-signing Ben Garland, which I assume D-Led sources, Ben Garland's agent. And, you know, the Falcons deciding to move on from Ben Garland makes a lot of sense. He's been a guy that I've sort of thought the Falcons could keep. But, you know, given the fact that he turns, I think, 31 in April, and the Falcons are probably on the lookout for somebody younger to sort of step in and be that sort of utility backup at both center and guard, I think makes a lot of sense for the Falcons to basically decide to move on from Ben Garland. You know, my hope was that the Falcons could at least bring back Ben Garland on a veteran minimum deal. Nothing guaranteed. If they get a good center slash guard in the draft, then they can potentially move on from Ben Garland in training camp, but they wouldn't necessarily be forced to have to find that guy in this upcoming draft. And now it seems like they're basically forced to do so. We'll have to sort of see when they decide to make that move. But, you know, I think in sort of if we're going to eulogize Ben Garland's tenure here in Atlanta, particularly looking at this past season, I don't think people should get it twisted. Just because Ben Garland got benched last year does not mean that Ben Garland played poorly. You can make a strong argument that the best guard on the Falcons roster in 2018 was Ben Garland. I think the Falcons offensive line play really improved after the injury to Brandon Fusco. In part, not to sit here and say in all because of Ben Garland, but I think Ben Garland's ability to hit those second level blocks was a huge boost for the Falcons run game. You also, again, as I mentioned on the offensive line review several weeks ago, that you also saw an improvement from Wes Schweitzer's game in the second half of the season. We also saw Alex Mack get better after a rough start to the year. And I think with basically after a certain point in the season, with, you know, the Falcons had four out of their five offensive linemen, Garland, Mack, Schweitzer, and Matthews playing at a competent level. That left Ryan Schrader still struggling, and that led to Sambrello getting the job. And so I think that was a big reason why the Falcons offensive line improved in the second half. And, you know, as I mentioned in previous episodes, that was evidenced by the significant growth of the Falcons running game in the second half of the season, as well as slight improvement in terms of pressure and whatnot, or at least in pass protection. I think they actually gave up a little bit more pressure in the second half of the year than they did in the first half, but it was by a marginal amount. And, you know, if you at least look at Pro Football Focus metrics in terms of Ben Garland and also Zane Beatles, you know, at that specific position, those two guys gave up a lot less pressure than Brandon Fusco did over the first 6.5 games last year. So I think Ben Garland, you know, is very underrated, is often the case. I think a lot of people sort of just, oh, he got benched by Zane Beatles or he got benched by the Falcons. And, you know, of course, Dan Quinn would never make a decision that is questionable. And I think the Falcons benched Ben Garland because he had struggled against New Orleans and the Falcons were looking to shake things up on their offensive line. And fortunately for the Falcons, I think Zane Beatles played reasonably well. I think he kind of struggled in those first couple of starts, particularly in the games where he was rotating with Ben Garland. But I think, you know, Beatles wound up finishing the season relatively strong. And so therefore, in hindsight, it's like, oh, well, you know, he needed to go through those two or three games against Green Bay and the like in Arizona and struggle in order to get those performances that we saw from Beatles against Carolina and Tampa Bay, which were legitimately good. So I think, you know, with Ben Garland, in terms of what he's done, he's started games at left guard, he started games at right guard, he's played, you know, he's filled in as a center injury replacement for Alex Mack. We also know his history of playing defensive tackle back in 2016 when the Falcons needed a nose tackle, when they should have kept Joey Imbu, who's now tearing it up in the Alliance of American Football. But, you know, that's a conversation for another day. But look, we wouldn't have gotten Ben Garland doing Ben Garland things if the Falcons had done the right thing and kept Joey Imbu. But, you know, again, that's a conversation for another day. So I do want to sit here and be like, I think Ben Garland played well this season. It's unfortunate that he's going to have to go. He was a Walter Payton Man of the Year candidate for the Falcons 2 years ago. So I think, you know, we should respect Ben Garland in terms of what he did. I'm saluting, you know, given his Air Force background. I think what this probably means, again, as I said at the top, that the Falcons are likely to draft a center, you know, at some point in this draft, because there isn't a current player on the roster besides Alex Mack that is a true backup center. And you can argue that a lot of Ben Garland's struggles over the last two seasons in particular were due to the fact that he's probably better suited to play center than he is to play guard and certain, you know, certain types of D-tackles like Sheldon Rankins, like Kawan Short, etc., aren't necessarily going to be great matchups for a guy like Garland, who's more of an athlete and sort of movement guy than necessarily a power guy. And, you know, he's similar to Chris Chester in that way, who also struggled against powerful D-tackles over the years as well. But that being said, I think, you know, the question is going to be, when do the Falcons address their center position? Do they wind up, you know, waiting into the draft and taking a center late? Because, you know, typically the premium along the offensive line is the least at the center position, and often you can get good quality starting caliber centers in the fifth, sixth round and whatnot. So they could potentially wait that late and still get a good player there. Or are they going to wind up taking a sort of center slash guard early in the draft, someone that can potentially come in right away and compete for a starting spot at left guard or right guard, but also sort of be stashed potentially with the idea of whenever Alex Mack decides to hang it up, whether that's 2020 or 2021 or later than that, that that guy could potentially take over for that spot as well. So I think those are options for the Falcons, and it's going to depend on who they like and what they want in this draft. We'll have to sort of see if that guy, if the Falcons wind up taking a guy early and that guy comes in right away and wins a starting spot and potentially bumps a guy like Wes Schweitzer. This is something I mentioned on the O-line review. There's a possibility that Wes Schweitzer could be the heir apparent as the Falcons' center of the future, or could certainly fill the shoes of Garland as that sort of utility interior guy that can play all three interior positions. We know that Schweitzer got some preseason reps last year at center. We've seen him start games at left guard and right guard, so it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he could sort of step into Ben Garland's shoes as sort of the top backup on the interior. But again, that is dependent on Brandon Fusco or somebody else stepping up at right guard and someone else potentially stepping up at that left guard position. You know, I do wonder if we're going to get the opportunity to see Sean Harlow get some center reps this preseason, which is a role that myself and others sort of, have projected him to be best suited for rather than guard, given, some of his short arms issues. So I'm hoping we get to see that opportunity as well now that Garland is absent. And so, all of these are sort of unanswered questions that at this point in time, don't know. We'll find out. But I think this is reasonably confident that the Falcons are planning to draft a center, a guy that can play center at some point this offseason. You know, again, I guess there's an outside shot that the Falcons will sign a player. But again, it seems weird that some of these decisions that the Falcons would make where they're sort of moving away from veterans at certain spots, that they would basically then replace them with other veterans. So we'll have to see if the Falcons wind up doing that. But I think, kudos to Ben Garland. Had an outstanding, 3 years in Atlanta and as a reserve player. And he's the type of reserve player. And I hope he gets another opportunity to stick in the league, assuming that he wants to continue playing football. Because I think he deserves it. I think he's a valuable backup, as I mentioned. He can play all three interior positions. He's not a guy that you want out there starting, for, 8 games or 9 games or 10 games in a season. But if you need to plug and play with him for a couple of games here or there at any one of those three spots, and as well as defensive tackle, I think he probably can play some tight end and fullback as well if you really wanted him to, then I think Ben Garland's the perfect backup for you. So I hope he gets the opportunity to continue playing. Want to thank him for his valuable service not only to the United States Armed Forces but also to the Atlanta Falcons. He has made my fandom over the last 3 years better. I can certainly say that. So there you have it, guys. There are my thoughts on Ty Sambrello and Ben Garland. If all things go according to plan, we will do a Q&A tomorrow to close out the week. And you guys can send in your Q&A questions to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. You can send them on Facebook to Locked On Falcons. You can also email them to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, as well as leave a comment at FalcFans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So we'll close out the week tomorrow with some sort of content, probably a Q&A, and then we'll try to come back next week and get you guys geared up for the combine, which starts, at least the workouts start at the end of the week. So we'll have some guests on to talk combine and start talking a little bit more draft stuff and get their thoughts on various subjects and whatnot. So look forward to that. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.